Have you ever been on a website that pops up with a big button that says sign up to our newsletter and a teeny tiny little button at the bottom of the page that says no thanks, I don't want a good deal? Turns out that's confirm shaming, which is just one example of what's been dubbed dark patterns. It's not just websites that are trying to sell you overpriced face creams that are using these. It's also rental technology platforms. And the federal government is finally calling time on these practices. Welcome to our second episode of our two-part investigation into rental technologies. So to recap what happened last episode, we spoke to researchers who said up to 50 points of data was being collected by rental technology platforms. Sometimes this data is summarised into an automated score that can be shown to the landlord. And if you don't put enough data in the application, you'll likely end up at the bottom of the pile. The Privacy Commissioner also spoke to us about the decision she made, zeroing in on one particular company to apply. But as part of handing down her official determination on the case, she also put the broader rental technology industry on notice over excessive data collection. One of the other things she did while handing down that decision was call out the dark patterns that were being used. So what are dark patterns?
So this was a really exciting aspect of the Commissioner's determination, because for the first time, the Commissioner actually took aim at online choice architecture. So what the Commissioner is referring to there is how the platform was designed. So the actual features, the wording used, where things were, those are the kinds of things that really fall under online choice architecture.
This is Lena Przedetsky. She's a research fellow at the University of Melbourne node of the ARC, Centre of Excellence for Automated Decision Making and Society.
And often the kind of tactics that are hurting consumers in as a result of online choice architecture are called dark patterns. So dark patterns are things that essentially manipulate consumers often into making choices that are not necessarily in their best interests. So in this determination, the Privacy Commissioner has actually said, well, you know what's unfair? It's the use of these dark patterns in this particular context. And she called out three. She called out confirm shaming, biased framing, and bundled consent.
What does that actually mean? How do people experience these online?
So, look, bias framing is framing that is designed to privilege a particular option that is beneficial to the company but not to the consumer. So, for example, it might be making, you know, one button bigger than another so that the choice that the consumer might be preferring to make is actually harder to choose.
Right.
Confirm shaming, I think, is a really interesting example. And in the determination, the Commissioner explicitly called out an example, which was when you're buying a ticket for an airline, you could be seeing a button that says, I'm willing to take the risk of not purchasing something, for example, insurance, rather than simply saying no. So that's called confirm shaming, and that is basically designed to make a user feel guilty or embarrassed for not taking an action that is in line with their interests.
That works on me, I tell you. I look at it and go, I don't know, do I want to take the risk of not taking out insurance? You've made it sound like I'm making a terrible decision here.
That's right. And you see that, you know, in more subtle ways, but it can still be quite frustrating when you say, no, I definitely don't want a discount because I don't like discounts. Well, maybe don't shame me. Maybe I just don't want to sign up to your mailing list. I don't know.
So you've got confirmed shaming, biased framing. What was the third dark pattern you mentioned?
It was bundled consent.
How does that work?
Yeah. So really that talks about having a range of things that users consent to. So, for example, you might say, you might be consenting to providing your personal information to the real estate agent that is assessing your application. And that makes sense, right? If you're using a rental application platform, when you tick that box, so when you provide consent, you might also be providing consent to a lot of other practices, such as providing your information to, say, utility companies or to be on a mailing list for the platform. So these are the kind of issues where we're talking about, you know, what you really want to do is to use it for a specific function, but you can't escape saying yes to all of these other things by virtue of the platform's design.
My gosh. So confirm shaming, biased framing, bundled consent. They're all these dark patterns that were found to be used by the rent tech industry when collecting our information.
Yeah. So specifically to apply, but certainly I have seen other examples of this before. And look, what's really interesting here is that the Privacy Act, when we're talking about unfair collection practices, this is the first time that a dark pattern has been cited as an example of an unfair collection practice.
We asked Kylie Davis, founder and president of PropTech Australia, the industry's peak body, whether she knew about dark patterns.
Look, I've heard of it, and I understand that in the context of what we've been through with the To Apply case and the Privacy Commissioner, there have been accusations of that. I think it's important that we're really clear on what is the problem that we've been solving for. We've been trying to make it easier for renters to apply for lots of properties because renters need to apply for lots of properties because there's not a lot of properties out there. And so the enthusiasm around what information needed to be collected in order to prove that went too far. Our tolerance as a society has changed dramatically in that time, and we're now going back to collecting, you know, less data rather than more. But we still need to reduce the risk around ensuring that the renter has the ability, is who they say they are and can pay the rent. What we also need to be careful, though, about is that people feel pressure to fill in that information, not just because of the way that the technology was worded, but because of the absolute lack of supply of rental property and the tightness and, you know, and people's feeling a bit desperate about really needing a place to live, which is completely understandable. So what's important is that RentTech isn't blamed for the current lack of supply in rental housing.
This is Jordan Vandenlam, creator of Shit Rentals, a website where renters can submit their experiences with a property and its associated real estate agency. It's been very popular over the past few years, as has Jordan's social media account. You may know his TikTok handle, @purplepingers. There's almost a psychological element here. If you're the kind of person that will, you know, go through all of these hoops, answer all of these questions, give over all of this information, you're going to be a compliant tenant as opposed to someone who pushes back.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the undercurrent of it all. In reality, though, everyone needs a roof over their head. So like you might get a renter that's me that's still, you know, being compliant, still doing all this stuff, like whatever, and then hates you and then goes and, you know, pursues you through VCAT or whatever it might be. But in the vast majority of circumstances, you're going to get someone who is compliant because, you know, the threat of eviction lingers over your head. The threat of homelessness lingers over your head. Like, we're just trying to survive here.
Would you call Shit Rentals a rental technology?
It's literally just like a review system. A reporter from The Age described it as two Google Sheets in a trench coat. Which is really, like, that's kind of what it is.
So outside of the Privacy Commissioner's decision, what is there protecting us from these dark patterns while we use rental technologies?
For a long time, consumer advocates, civil society, researchers have been calling for a ban on unfair trading practices that manipulate consumers.
The Competition and Consumer Act, which came into effect in 2011, has been the closest piece of legislation that could protect us from these practices. Its purpose for being was to promote competition and fair trading and give consumers protection around the goods they were purchasing. But because our online world has changed so dramatically over the last 15 years, it's been struggling to keep up.
Now, it has done a lot of wonderful things, and it prohibits certain unfair practices, such as the use of unfair contract terms and the use of misleading advertising, for example. However, there's been a real gap in the law in terms of making sure that there is an explicit prohibition on unfair trading practices.
An amendment to this Competition and Consumer Act has just been passed in federal parliament. It now does exactly what Lena said was missing. It prohibits unfair trading practices like dark patents. It comes into effect on July 1st, 2027. How effectively it will be enforced remains to be seen. So we've been talking a lot about why we're being encouraged to input all this data. But what happens once all our data is on these rental technology platforms? Samantha Floriani is a PhD researcher at Monash University whose research is called The Machine-Readable Renter. We asked her how common these data leaks actually are.
Well, it's really hard to tell exactly. Unfortunately, it's quite hard to tell across any sort of platform, not just rent tech. Tools like Have I Been Pwned are really useful for checking that, where you can type in your email or your phone number, and that can sometimes reveal a little bit. But all of that to say, it's really hard to know the extent to which our data is being leaked by these platforms. What I would say, though, is that reporting from The Guardian this year revealed that 7 popular rent tech platforms have a range of serious security vulnerabilities, which was exposing millions of documents containing personal information of renters, as well as landlords and contractors and so on. Of those 7, a handful of them responded to that discovery and have, you know, started to make changes. I'm not sure where it's at now, but what I think that indicates is that, you know, seven of them to have these vulnerabilities indicates sort of a bigger picture problem, I think. And while, you know, we don't necessarily have evidence of a breach happening yet with those vulnerabilities, their existence, I think, is very alarming. And I don't think we should have to wait for the harm to occur for there to be movement in this space to be better protecting renters' data.
We'll put the links to what Sam has referred to in our show notes. Now, John Gilmovich, president of the Property Owners Association and a licensed real estate agent, had a different perspective on data security. Are data breaches something that you worry about?
No, not at all. Not at all. I haven't experienced any. I don't know of any cases, major or minor, in the real estate industry that cause any data breaches at this point. Mind you, anything that you place online, you know, is open to, you know, cybersecurity issues. You know, we know that banks have been hacked. We know government agencies have been hacked. You know, telcos have been hacked, and, you know, even the White House has been hacked. If somebody wants information that badly, and they know how to maneuver themselves in cybersecurity land, they can get that information. But I haven't seen any cases where anyone's trying that hard to obtain someone's personal information on a tenancy application. And for what reason, I'm still questioning why would anyone do that anyway.
Do you understand how some people might see it as a pretty big risk putting all of that information in one place, in one form?
Of course.
And what would you say to those people?
They shouldn't fear it.
So there seems to be some disagreement as to whether data security is actually a problem. Does the Privacy Commissioner, Carly Kind, have a better understanding of the threat?
Our office receives reports of data breaches that have the potential to result in serious harm to individuals. So if it's a data breach that doesn't reach that threshold of serious harm, then we don't receive any notification of it. Even if we think about how high that threshold is, that a data breach may result to serious harm to individuals, we receive at least 1,000 notifications every year of data breaches. The main sectors from which those data breach reports are coming are the finance sector, the health sector, and Australian government agencies. The rent tech and real estate property sector is a relatively small sector anyway, but it is particularly so because Australian privacy law doesn't currently cover small businesses, which means any company with an annual turnover of less than $3 million a year. So many real estate agents actually aren't covered by Australian privacy law because they don't reach that threshold. So I think that probably explains why we don't have as many data breach notifications coming from the property sector.
That's a really important distinction there that I hadn't considered, and it makes perfect sense when you realise that, because we think surely, you know, these are breaches of significance to the people whose data has been leaked. I shouldn't have to learn about it on Have I Been Pwned?
Indeed. And I should say there has been some changes to that situation in the last few months because the counter-terrorist financing and anti-money laundering legislation, which requires certain kinds of companies like real estate agents to check people's ID, now extends the Privacy Act to real estate agents and to lawyers as well. So some agencies that weren't previously covered by the Privacy Act will become covered by the Privacy Act going forward. So, I mean, that's probably getting in the weeds a little much for your listeners, but suffice it to say that I think there's generally a recognition that, in fact, some of the places in which people are having to hand over the most amount of personal information and the most amount of sensitive and, you know, risky information are places like real estate agents that might not be covered by privacy law at all. And so, you know, there's a recognition of that and a growing move to extend those obligations to those companies as well.
Kylie Davis gave us a more optimistic vision of the property technology industry.
The industry is looking at active ways to not need to collect that information, so not need to collect and store it on our servers, upgrading to internationally recognised security levels, insisting on multi-factor authorisation and things like that. But and I think the AML legislation is probably the best example of it, and how far we've come is that there's no prop tech out there really wants to be holding on to personal identification data forever.
The AML she's referring to is the same one the Privacy Commissioner was just talking about. It refers to the incredibly named Anti-Money Laundering and Counter-Terrorism Financing Transitional Rules 2026.
Even the AML verification technology is capturing the photograph of the person on their phone, capturing an image of their passport and their driver's license for the purposes of that and matching it to the government record. But then the minute that match has happened and the code has been sent back to say, Jessie is who Jessie says she is, and we know she's not on a government watch list, and we know that she has a verified identity, that data then disappears. They just hang on to the token.
So,
and that's safer for everybody.
Is that AML verification tech, is that integrated now into rent tech platforms, or is that something for the future?
No, it's not integrated into rental tech platforms, but there is legislation in across a lot of states coming in that is probably going to mean that ID verification in rental tech will become quite similar.
Oh, okay. So when are you expecting to be using that as an industry?
That's a question for every state government. But to give you an idea, AML Tranche 2 legislation has been coming in for a while. It starts on July 1st in the sales sector, in residential sales. And it is one of the biggest rollouts of legislation and obligation on behalf of the real estate sector for a very long time.
A secure token-based identity system seems like an ideal way to protect our data. But while we wait for state governments to enforce it, does the Privacy Commissioner's decision against TuApply make any headway on data security?
So our decision didn't go to the lengths of requiring platforms to delete information they already hold. Although I would note for renters who have used TuApply before, TuApply does have quite progressive policies around enabling you to delete the information that you've previously uploaded. It's not the case that broad brush across Australian law that you have the right to delete data or request the deletion of data that an entity holds on you. But 2Apply has given renters that right. So if you are concerned that you have handed over excessive information in the past, you can log on and take control of that information yourself. And we would really hope more generally that this makes, renters more aware of what information it is fair to collect about them and more empowered to push back on that and to make complaints where they see that platforms might be going above and beyond what is actually reasonably required.
So to sum up so far, John thinks we shouldn't fear data breaches. Most real estate agencies don't fall under the purview of the Privacy Act because they're too small, making it too hard to understand how much of a problem data security is. However, a Guardian investigation found that at least 7 property technology platforms are struggling with the problem. There is a potential solution to basic ID checks on the horizon with new AML legislation, but what actually changes now? Do we have a choice not to use these platforms?
Yeah, this is really tricky, and it comes back to the underlying power imbalance that exists between renters, real estate agents, and landlords. Because, you know, in some states there are protections or there are requirements to offer renters an alternative option. But the trouble is that in reality, in practice, if that's the sort of the way that's presented to you, usually it's presented as the only option. You have to kind of ask if you want to do a paper form. And then that comes with all this, you know, pressure of being like, okay, well, if I'm going to be seen as like a burden or annoying, or, you know, my paper application is just going to kind of like, whoops, fall into the bin. Like, you know, it creates the power imbalance really creates this sense that if you do not do exactly what is being asked of you, that you're just less likely to get the property. You know, we are living in a really severe rental crisis. The market is extremely tight. Competition is high. And so renters are well aware, and this has been reflected very strongly in my research, that if they don't just do whatever is asked of them, they're likely to get passed up. So I think that is one really important factor here to keep in mind. The other thing is that say you're using the online application platform and there's a piece of information that you don't want to provide. The way that they are designed, like the structure of these platforms, really encourages you to provide as much information as possible. And that they do that through a few different ways. So one would be like, you literally cannot progress the form without filling out the fields. They also use tactics like dark patterns, where they'll sort of nudge you towards providing more information than you might otherwise. So all of this together creates a dynamic where it's incredibly challenging to push back. And the consequences or the potential risks of pushing back can be really severe. You know, we're talking about people's access to housing. For a lot of the renters that I've spoken with, they're just not willing to roll that dice.
We asked John for his thoughts on this.
There's no law that I'm aware of that you have to offer a second option, like a paper-based application. So it's up to the individual agency whether they give that choice or not.
Are you aware of any agencies that do offer a paper choice?
I am aware of a few, but most have evolved into online processes now. But as far as that information going public, it doesn't go public. The apps are created that the information is locked in with that particular agency, and that agency has that particular access only. And from what I understand, the rules are that records are only kept for 3 years and then must be destroyed.
So they're kept safe by the platforms, except in the case where someone has hacked into
that's correct.
Systems.
That's correct. So I've yet to hear anyone being hacked and personal information stolen on a tenancy application. You know, maybe that one day there will be a case, but at this stage I have not heard anything about that.
So we'll have to wait and see what happens over the next few years, especially as the Unfair Trading Practices Amendment comes in on July 1st next year. As for what individuals can do in the meantime, there's unfortunately not a whole lot. But Jordan Vandenlam, creator of Shit Rentals, did have some advice.
I'd suggest, you know, joining the renters in housing union, joining your trade union, arguing for your trade union to do something about this stuff. Like, Shit Rentals was just a kind of way to let people know about what the actual conditions of certain houses are like certain real estate agencies as well, and actually get like a, you know, paint a picture of what you're going into, and like try turn the tables as much as you can in a situation where people are experiencing like one of the biggest power imbalances that I can think of.
Samantha Floriani also had thoughts on this.
You know, I'm a long-term privacy advocate. I've been, you know, living and breathing this stuff for a very long time. And so, you know, I'm coming into, and I'm also a renter, and I come into these applications with all of this sort of knowledge of data practices and privacy law and whatnot. And so you would think, okay, you've got enough knowledge, like you can push back. But, you know, even someone like me, I still, more often than not, won't push back as much as I would like to, because at the end of the day, I need somewhere to live.
I think a lot of us can relate to what Sam has said there. I originally thought of looking into what's going on behind the scenes with rental technologies when I was making our series Opt Out, the Download This Show guide to taking back control of your online life. Our investigation revealed that everything from my mother's phone number to my passport details had been leaked in a data breach of one of these rent tech platforms. At that time, after 20 years of renting with a stellar record, I still had no choice but to provide these details, or I would have had nowhere for myself and my family to live. It's an overwhelming thing to experience, and if you've been through the same, know you are not alone. I'll pop a link to that series in our show notes to help guide you through the process. That's all we have time for this week. Our inbox is full of emails from you, so please keep them coming. We want to know all of your thoughts, and it might send us down another research rabbit hole. The email is downloadthisshow@abc.net.au. I'm also on Instagram @RayJohnston, if that's more your style. Now, we've had someone reach out to say, for 3 years, I conducted Commonwealth security clearances at the highest level. These are known as very invasive and encompassing in the amounts of information they collect. And yet, when I fill out a rental application, I actually provide more information than I provide to the government. You also may remember that we reached out to apply, but we hadn't heard back. Well, we've heard back. We will be speaking to them, so keep an eye out for that in your podcast feed over the next couple of weeks. A big thanks to all of our guests for this episode, and thank you to my producer, Jessie Kay. This episode was produced on Burramattagal, Darug, Gundungurra, Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung, and Kobbera country. My name is Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show.